Good morning and welcome back to the Redacted Culture Cast. If you've been following us on Instagram, you would have probably been expecting to wake up this morning to an episode from SHOT Show this year featuring, if you were going to make it like a bluegrass band, it would be like Grid Bass and the Modlight Boys, but it included some guests who've been, well, a number of guests who've been on before, Colin Underdahl, who was the first, Luke Brown, and two other fellows from Modlight. Stay tuned and see who's there, as well as Grid Bass, Jake from Grid Bass. And we had a longer conversation about industry questions and sort of the attitude, not necessarily this year alone of SHOT Show, because some of them, it was their first year and they didn't have much to contrast it from, but also how we look at things that we want to see accomplished, as well as ideas like innovation and culture building, or even just having a sense of community in these chaotic times. But again, I guess that's not the right way of saying it. But one thing is for certain about 2023 is it hit a lot of us Americans in the pocketbook, and we are no exception to that. And as a result, the computer that we're using to process these videos, because this was all filmed in a condo, and having to pull all those gigs of data and put it into a video is taking my computer much longer than was ideal. And so as a result, I'm going to have to push it back, maybe even break it into two parts, just for the sake of the datum, the data. But instead, today, I'm starting off with an episode on just how busy the weekend has been. And that makes me sound a little bit like a news host character, which I suppose is an interesting place to approach things as a philosopher. But quite a bit has happened in the last 7 days, to be specific. We had an interview between Tucker Carlson interviewed Vladimir Putin, who's the president of Russia. We should all know this right now because there's enough people screeching into the internet that he's a war criminal. And then there was this thing, I guess, called the Super Bowl. But so let's start with a shout out to the homeschoolers in the crowd who didn't care about the Super Bowl before it was cool. Because I discovered in our peaceful Sunday afternoon that it was the Super Bowl and so many people were off watching that. And to be clear, I guess it doesn't need to be left as a derogatory statement. It's just it's sort of an interesting spectacle it's turning into more and more. Even when I was younger, the Super Bowl always drew people's attention, and time seems to be a flat circle, because I remember as a child in different Christian circles, there'd be criticism of how much attention is put on or how much the Christian light community would mimic culture outside of its own, let's just say, four walls, with, you know, it, like Super Bowl themed Sundays and these different kind of odd activities. And yet we see that same thing happening today. And there certainly is a balancing act there to be had between, in biblical sense, being in the world, but not of the world. And so I know there were some predictions going on with who would win who. And all I can tell you that I know is that both teams had red in their uniform, I think. And there's a meme of somebody yelling at somebody else, and Taylor Swift is being accused of being a propaganda object, which, I mean, I can't verify, but okie dokie. So let's talk about Ukraine, and let's talk about the interview with Vladimir Putin. You can tell a lot about a person by how they reacted to the idea of there being an interview. There is no shortage of articles calling Tucker Carlson a traitor, or there is no shortage of people who like to voice their opinions about Vladimir Putin as an individual on different websites, you know, things like Twitter or now X or social media in different ways. And what I'm trying to present this idea from and how I want to approach this as far as in our conversation is how you can use that kind of tool in a form of open source information on making evaluations of people while still maintaining a sense of not necessarily compassion or empathy, because those words have been hijacked by the left, but those, but a sense of humility before the Lord in that sense, because it's, you have to be careful in, we have to be careful in the ways that we not necessarily make judgments, but there's plenty of ways to address this, but the issues are something like we balance the humility that we have as human beings in making decisions of consequence with the requirement of us as men of honor to make decisions as well. And so there's plenty of short, quippy sayings that you might pull from places like the military. For example, a good plan well executed is better than an excellent plan never accomplished. Or there's another one that you, there are other kind of phrases we might want to say, you know, don't summarize the entirety of a person's life into a single sentence. But let's go back to the situation at hand. There are, I think if we zoom out a little bit and we look at the landscape of this conflict, whether it's the East versus the West or American liberal values versus post-communist sort of neo-trappings of traditionalism in the East with Russia, or if we look at Russia and Ukraine, or if we look at America, Ukraine, and Russia, there's something I think that should be noted, and that is that Vladimir Putin is the president of Russia, and he certainly presents himself from a position of strength. And now, in the interview, this isn't done in sort of a Napoleonic fashion with ermine coats and giant displays of force and power, but he does so in the way that he describes his positions and the way that he talks or he responds to the questions posted by Tucker Carlson. And so this drastically contrasts the way that I have viewed people oftentimes boisterously describe their opinions about Vladimir Putin. For example, there is a certain caste or group collection of people who will say things like, well, Putin's a war criminal, and they'll be very proud of that statement. And the reality of the world is that they're very, very small, and the authority and capability that Putin has is much, much larger. And this is a classic example of how if you had to pay the consequences for those kind of words, you probably wouldn't be the ones talking. And we need a, it's sort of an interesting problem that America distinctly, maybe distinctly has. I mean, I it's not solely, but it's just, it seems to be particularly loud about it, about how Americans are very forthright, if you want to be polite, in espousing their opinions about something that their opinion is rather insignificant on. I'd say if you want to speak in the way of our modern vernacular, people who have who are too quick to espouse that Putin is a war criminal on social media are a carbon tax on us all that we are all paying for in mental energy spent sorting them out of our rational conversations. So that's a little bit of a quick snippet is if we're going to talk about the totality of circumstances involving Russia, Ukraine, NATO, and the United States, the level of intellect and moral character displayed in somebody who just decides to shout this information out with little regard for where that arrow lands, they're insignificant in the conversation, and that's certainly an interesting way of identifying oneself as insignificant. Moving on, however, is the idea of Tucker Carlson being a traitor for interviewing Vladimir Putin, And while you could be pretty quippy and say, well, he's a journalist and he's doing a journalism, of course, all the fake journalists would hate him for being a fake journalist. All the fake journalists would hate him for doing the real thing. That there's a certain amount of envy that can be identified in these conversations. However, I want to make an observation and a point of consideration for your intellectual engagement with people. Because, again, this is the Redacted Culture Cast. We talk about equipping you with the intellectual tools necessary for a dynamic, violent, or potentially violent environment. Or, in other words, if we're going to talk about wars of ideas, I want to give you the sharp swords. And so one of the things that we deal with in what you might refer to as the battleground of ideas are dishonest interlocutors and how do we make evaluations of people and their capabilities of conversation. And it's not really like a Dragon Ball Z thing where I look at your power level. It's something much more closer to home. And it's I want to look at your rhetoric and your arguments and what you're thinking about. And so when somebody goes about and says, whether they're in journalism or they're social media or they're just in casual conversation, they say that Tucker is a traitor for interviewing Vladimir Putin, what you're dealing with is a person who is making a statement that ideas don't matter. It's just power structures. And by interviewing Vladimir Putin, somebody is giving Vladimir Putin access to power that he wouldn't otherwise have, which is useful against America. And so I will reiterate the beginning of that statement. When somebody says that Tucker is a traitor to America for interviewing Vladimir Putin, what they are saying is that ideas do not matter, or at least they do not matter to them. So then why would we as individuals approach them with the dignity of being an intellectual? This is what I mean in this key process of sorting out individuals from our intellectual discourse. It's not so simple as isolating people and like shutting them out. And you might see the kind of Ben Shapiro side of like, you know, let's have a rational debate, or the trope of the right saying debate me, whereas the left is like, sure, I'll debate you, but I'll have a gun to your head. Metaphorically, of course. It'll just be a bunch of people in the streets with torches ready to burn your house down if you don't. Symbol that you are part of their ideology, which is nothing new. I mean, it's just mob rule is nothing new. You can look into, most of human history. Despotism is still despotism, even if you don't wear a crown. So why this is a sorting tool and why it is a useful thing to engage in is that when we're going to have a discussion and you're going to spend the intellectual time and energy to have a conversation with somebody, it's important to make a solid assessment of where they're at and what they are approaching and what do they believe to be right and true and good. And an honest intellectual will approach somebody that they disagree with and they don't understand with the intent to remedy those things. And maybe what we don't agree on might be solved through discussion. Maybe even if we're going to turn a discussion into a formal debate. But a debate is more like a game of chess, not even in its formalized sense in academia, but a debate even between persons is a game more like a formalized game of chess, because there are rules, and there are rules such as like we're not going to engage in certain fallacies, particularly the most surface level ones of ad hominem, where I attack your character instead of the strength of your argument, or if or so on and so forth. but when we're having a discussion or even a conversation, it's not as formal. But even if we're having a casual conversation with somebody, it is important to evaluate the intellectual integrity of the individual approaching it. And this is where humility comes in, not be too harsh nor too loose with how we distribute our time. And in that sense, sort of form of justice being treat something for what it is and not for what it isn't. And maybe that is there's another probably more important word, or there's a probably more suitable word to fit that block. And so I've been talking about in evaluating individuals, especially in their relevance to, say, what's going on in the world, the levels of relative significance, or the making moral or intellectual evaluations of people's moral character and their participation in a conversation, using Russia and the conversation of Russia and Ukraine and Vladimir Putin's interview with Tucker Carlson's interview with Vladimir Putin as a framework. But let's talk a little bit about some things that I've observed from Ukraine itself. Now, it's important if you're now it's important is probably a it's a redundant statement if what I'm going to say is important. If you're one of those people, which I would not expect really to be following this channel, that finds a certain amount of identity or a pastime in hating on veterans, then you're going to have an opportunity to punch the air. But when Ukraine was invaded by Russia in 2022, I believe the invasion started on on American clocks was a Thursday, and by Monday I was pretty much boots on the ground in country. And what I mean boots on the ground is I went there as a bit of a journalist, and there were some other things going on. You understand why I'm being vague. And one of the things that I observed, and I spent quite a bit of time observing there, was the way that different Americans approached Ukraine. And while there are some criticisms to be leveled at specific individuals, namely things like Malcolm Nance, who has made a great display of being such a great and noble veteran, even though there's no shortage of criticism that would be sufficient to put that man down, in a sense. Some things became rather apparent, and that one was that America really isn't that much of a serious peoples. And I think we might jump to quick conclusions and look at Americans as a whole as being naive or foolish or short-sighted. And I want to kind of nip that in the bud really quickly, because it doesn't matter where you go in the world, you will find distributions of people who have a severe lack of knowledge about the world around them. And if I'm going to be consistent intellectually with how we use the word naive, naive is a combination of a lack of knowledge or believing things for the wrong reasons and a sense of innocence. Naivety bears with it a semblance of innocence. Yet when Americans are criticized for being naive, especially on the new war front that they were volunteering to support or help, or maybe it's just bring resources or curb human trafficking efforts or make some money in journalism or whatever, I think it was a fair assessment to say that Americans were naive in war fighting mechanisms, thinking because they had perhaps in a way gotten used to fighting a conflict that was extremely asymmetrical, where they had air superiority and their opponents were not using direction finding technology to identify, or the Afghanis and the Iraqis were not using cell towers and direction finding technology to locate targets and hit them with missiles. Most notably, the Afghanis and the Iraqis that we were in conflict with in the global war on terror were not known particularly to infiltrate bars, restaurants, and locations to create or to engage in high level espionage against Western individuals. And there's another thing that was another form of naivety that was very present amongst the sort of veteran-ish category of people who went to go to Ukraine, who had experience in war, is that they were very familiar with war fighting from a position of power where they had the infrastructure of bases and supply lines and food and tents, where at that time in the early phases of the war, the Ukrainians were really quite scrambling for any semblance of logistics at all. And so people there, the kind of caricature that I saw a number of times is that you'd have an individual who went over to Ukraine under this kind of very loose, false guise, very, very see-through guys, like Maslin thin guise of humanitarian aid, but their intent was to go more or less fight the Russians, which, I mean, took no effort to really discern because they would shout it from the corners in Lviv. But the and they were, you see, you'd see this kind of underlying expectation that they were going to go to, they were going to go over there, and because they knew how to shoot a gun, they were going to be given like an AK-74 with a suppressor and a set of dual tube nods, and they were going to get integrated into some sort of special operations, like forward observations group kind of thing. Only to find out that they were expected to guard a post or sit in a trench or move food, and there were no beds, and it was a completely different environment. And so the naivety there, which I think was rather quickly corrected, was that this was a very different type of conflict than what Americans were used to. And so you'll notice that in my conversation about Ukraine and Russia and Putin, I haven't been making grandiose moral evaluations of the situation that's at hand. And particularly, I haven't been making long evaluations or even snapshot evaluations of how it's going for this force or that force, or whether there's money here or money there. And particularly because where I stand in my position, the issue between Ukraine, NATO, and Russia is extremely complicated in a sense, that and that complication has seems to be mostly handled by people we don't see publicly, as well as by those who handle it publicly tend to bumble it pretty quick. Now let me expand on that. In the conversation between Putin, in the interview. Where when Tucker Carlson interviewed Vladimir Putin, there was a pattern that was presented in the way that Putin spoke. Now, you'd expect him to present his idea, what he thinks he is doing, in the best possible light. We do this all the time. Why would I tell you, well, I think everything that I'm doing is wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway? And Vladimir Putin also, in a sense, would talk. I'll say it in a critical sense. It would come across that he was talking out of both sides of his mouth, where it's one condition, where there's a condition over here for you, but there's rules for you, but not for me. Or maybe I can level criticism at you, but there's no criticism of it worthy for me. And I understand it. However, that is a international policy way of talking about what's going on in such a grave situation. Putin is already in a position, and he, because he is in charge of, let's call Russia a great nation in that sense, because it is no small feat, or no small country, and it has no short history, he is not going to present himself from a position of weakness. And so Americans expecting him to say, I'm sorry for what I did, shouldn't be sorely disappointed. They should be wondering why they thought that way to begin with. And Putin, he presented a sort of, I'm not going to say it's a dualism, but he presented something that we should expect, but it's interesting how it comes out. And he criticizes the West for having kind of a two-tiered system of, a two-layer approach to international affairs. For example, there are the treaties and the politicians on top, and then there are the intelligence agencies and the war fighting that goes on below. And he criticized America, particularly NATO, for doing this, because he was saying that he criticized NATO for making agreements and signing treaties not to move forces closer to Russia, but then agencies like the CIA would instigate a coup in Ukraine. So he criticizes the West for doing this, for having this kind of duplicitous nature, all the while holding on to the idea that Russia doesn't do the same, that Russia has its own intelligence agencies. He refers to them a number of times in the interview, but each time he frames them in such a way that they're above board, that there's unity in Russia between what they say and what they do, and there isn't any contradiction there. But the West is not that way. The West says one thing and does another. Again, this is how Putin frames the kind of the kind of international affairs concern between politics above and secret agents, secret war below. He says that Americans or the West is duplicitous because they say one thing and then their CIA does another. Whereas in Russia, everything is in line. We are honest in what we are honest and forthright. He doesn't go so far to assert this, but the way that he presents himself would give off that impression. And this is an interesting problem for America right now, especially going forward, and the paradigm of war that we're in. I should do another episode on culture as an attack vector for war making, because Putin criticizes Zelensky of Ukraine for not having a separation of church and state, because Putin accuses Zelensky of banning certain religious practices. But and then so we'll have to get into that in the future. But the question and the international affairs problem that Americans and the West are going to have to start handling, or we're going to have to pay up with, and the whole world will eventually have to deal with it in some way, is this sort of duplicitous nature of how we do international affairs, that we offer an olive branch with a politician, but we send in a covert action underneath to engage in warfare. And the reality of that situation, though, is that there are people who are acting and working in the world, and then there are those who are talking. And so the idea that America could just stop participating in the international affairs of the world is not only a pipe dream, but it's impossible, because we are the world power, or a world power for now. And so with that, we are going to wrap up this episode of the Redacted Culture Cast, this sort of impromptu talk on the interview between Tucker Carlson and Vladimir Putin and moral evaluations. If this episode has been beneficial to you, know that we are, or you're, and you're watching it up to date with where we're at, then know that we've got a pre-order going on of our classic tees, as well as a special hoodie for you. And that is available now at redactedllc.com. Or if you want to support us, please go to redactedculture.locals.com for more discussion. We'll talk to you soon. Go forth and conquer.